community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Mike, it's drive time on Brentwood and Billericay's Phoenix FM. On the way next, Visage and Fade to Grey. In the studio with me now, we've got Sam Zealy, and Sam's a sculptor, aren't you, Sam?
Yep, that's right.
So, how old are you? How old are you?
I'm now 28.
28 years old. I don't know whether sculptors have to be a particular age. Is it something that comes onto you from a particular age, or is it your upbringing that makes you a sculptor? Because it's not something you just wake up and decide to do one day, is it?
Well, I suppose in the famous words of Joseph Beuys, he said everybody's a sculptor, everybody's an artist.
Mm.
But as far as my foundation is concerned, it very much came from a family and upbringing, being very much within the visual domain.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've always had a very strong visual language around me as far as my mother is concerned, also my grandfather and my aunties and cousins. They're sort of actors, Broadway directors, architects and, you know, artists in general.
So you come from a very, very creative background.
Yeah.
So you've been brought up with actors and directors and you've just absorbed their creativity to a certain extent.
Yeah,
and added it to your own.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah, I can understand that. I can understand. It is a logical step to become a sculptor. Because I just wonder, you hear a lot about sculptors and the Turner Prize and whatever. You think, how would you become a sculptor? It's not... is there a college that you go to? Do they train you? Or?
It's a very long-winded process. I mean, out of A-levels, which you can take, you know, a number of different subjects, but I took the sciences, which I very much base my practice within, as well as the arts. And out of that, we went into foundation, which is a year-long course. And then after that, I went to Wimbledon College of Art, did my BA, which is a three-year course. After that, took 2 years out, which I established my studio, which is actually in Essex, where I do and devise a lot of my visual practice. And then I went on to the Royal College of Art, and now I'm back in the game.
I never realised... I feel very ignorant now. I really do feel ignorant. I never realised that there was so much lead-up to just start to designing stuff and trying to sell it in the public sector as such.
Yeah, I mean, it's a massive... there's a many, many different logistics that come with being an artist, not just being a sculptor. This comes with photography or printmaking and sculpture as well. I mean, sculpture particularly is incredibly difficult because you have to really get relationships with certain types of firms and industries, and you start to make a real, I suppose, sort of lovely melting pot of different contacts and networks that you use and collaborate with and go forward on projects so that you can actually establish most of your ambitious ideas.
Is it a lucrative business to do? Because this is a line of business that I've never looked into, so I'll forgive my ignorance.
No, at all. It can be. I mean, usually within the realm of selling your sculpture or selling whatever visual work that you do, that's probably the most lucrative line.
Yeah.
But as far as public sculpture is concerned, that most of the money, if you was to get like a 50k sort of fund, basically you inject most of that money into the making process. So working with the industries, because it doesn't come cheap, especially in this country.
No, at all. But so how long from original conception of an idea, which I presume you just... Well, I don't know. How do you come to the idea to make a particular sculpture?
Take years, mate.
I can imagine it does. How does it...
No, I mean, basically, I suppose in so many respects, sometimes if I'm going working towards like a solo show, say,
right,
that can take, you know, up to about 2 or 3 months to really kind of speak through the curator, speak with the director,
right,
get your own ideas, and then speak with the industry that you need to actually realise the ambition and scale of the project that you're working towards.
Okay.
In other circumstance, like, you know, bigger projects, which for instance, I'm working towards a piece which is called Microclimate. I've actually changed the title of it now, which is called Rewinding the Climate Clock,
uh-huh,
which is an iceberg regeneration rig.
Right.
So basically it's using solar technology to make ice, which is lovely, poetic, sort of dancing, whimsical idea.
I can see.
But that idea, for instance, has, you know, taken 2 years to get to the point where I am now, and I'm still looking for individuals to fund the body.
So this, and how much do you think it would take to fund that sort of project?
I mean, it depends. Really.
Obviously, you've got the 2 years behind you already, so you'll need to be paid for those 2 years because you've already done the work.
To be honest with you, that sort of project I'm not actually being paid for because it's something completely and utterly fabricated from my mind.
Right.
So therefore, I'm just basically going along, trying to find the right resources to actually fundamentally start the project off. So it's basically, I suppose, research and development. And then after you've actually established points of contact, from there on, you can really start to have conversations and collaborate with the different individuals that you really need to make this into a reality.
See, so making a piece of art like this isn't just a sort of like, oh, I'll spend 2 months on that and then, you know, it's not, is it? This is a long-winded thing. You spend a long while. Do you draw plans of the actual finished product before you start it, or is it put together as it goes?
I generally actually draw all of my plans beforehand because it's very sort of cognitive, all of the ideas.
Yeah.
Like somebody like Christo or Richard Wilson would draw all of the plans towards an idea, an ideology, a methodology, everything. It has to be completely composed within this whole direction. So the whole thrust has to be put forward through a planning process at first before it becomes a physical entity within the world.
Now, I know Nikola, I don't know if you know Nikola Tesla.
Right.
He invented alternating current.
Yeah, of course.
One of his inventions, he's got hundreds and hundreds. He used to work very, very similarly to the way your team worked with this, but he used to physically see the plans in front of his eyes before he drew them. He didn't start to draw them and see whether that were. Is that the same sort of thing? Do you see the finished product and then go about planning it?
In so many respects, there are some pieces that I've, I suppose, worked backwards.
Yeah.
But in other respects, like Tesla,
yeah.
I mean, he made many things which in the art world we call maquettes,
yeah.
especially in the sculpture world. It's basically models or tests.
Yeah.
You know? It's just a way of basically producing something in the best possible circumstance and outcome that you can. So, yeah, I suppose I can work backwards as well, but generally I do push forward through an idea, through the drawings and really working out through the calculus of how I'm actually going to bring something about, because a lot of the work is very pragmatic and it has a lot of logistics, working with balance and equilibriums. So I have to really get it right first time or there's no real point of fulfilling that particular idea.
Now, I know you're showing some of your pieces of work at the Brentwood Arts Festival.
Right, yeah.
Is the arts festivals around the country what you basically aim for to show off your work, to see whether you can get... Well, I don't know. Do you do it to show this is what I've done, or do you do it to try and find a buyer of the arts involved?
I mean, in so many respects, it's good to always continue your network as far as collectors are concerned,
because
that's what does fundamentally actually fund your practice. So I'm showing at Mersey Mayor House.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, no, Merry Mead House. From the 6th to the 12th.
Yeah.
And that show is basically, I mean, it's basically part of the Brentwood Arts Festival.
Yeah.
And that the idea for that show is really to bring the site of my work towards the environment of Brentwood so that people can come along and witness the pieces instead of just looking online and seeing what I do. They can actually come along, physically be there, witness it, be a part of the excitement, enjoyment of the sculpture. And hopefully, in sort of, you know, maybe a couple of years to come, we could possibly put together some sort of, you know, public sculpture for the environment of Brentwood.
Okay, well, I've had a look at your website. Great website, by the way. Fantastic website. And can you explain the thought process behind some of the bits of works of art on there for me?
Yeah, of course.
The one I've got in front of me is the Cross of Lorraine. It's two square pieces of wood. They look like old wood, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Very old wood. With the piece of wrought iron in the centre, and you've got a light.
Sure.
That really caught my imagination. What does a light represent?
Not the best one to talk about. I haven't figured it out yet. I'm joking. No. It's basically an idea which is in the the beginning of a real sort of, I suppose, clarity. You know?
Right.
But the idea is about sort of humanity imposing itself upon the landscape of this planet and the adamant demise of certain, I suppose, environmental changes, the circumstances of like different things like the jet stream or El Nino effect, these sorts of things.
Right, okay.
But it's symbolised, obviously, from that of the Cross of Lorraine, which the Free French used during World War II and General de Gaulle. And basically the symbol there is, I mean, at the top there's the light which you spoke about, which is a halogen. The halogen actually burns the oak, and it's French oak.
Right.
Burns the oak so that eventually the actual middle, that part, will just become charcoal. And when that actually, you know, when it burns through, it basically will snap, therefore changing the symbol, meaning that the symbolism of the idea has completely and utterly been lost. And it's this type of reference to that of the sorts of changes that are going on around us as far as the human organic society is... Yeah,
eroding nature.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose the human element, the man element, is the metal piece in the middle, holding the two parts of nature.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, definitely process. I mean, how do we get to that mild steel, armature? It goes through a process of industry. So there's all these pragmatic and problematic also ideas which are going on within this whole, within the whole clarity of the sculpture.
Well, Sam, that's really good, because I looked at this and I thought, I can see that, but I don't know what the light represents. I don't know. I didn't understand what the light represents. Again, ignorant. Sorry.
No.
But you got some fantastic pieces of work on this on the website. If you want to go and have a look at Sam's work, samzeely.com. This interview is actually going to be on phoenixfm.com as well. And what I'll do is I'll put a link, if it's all right with you, to your website.
Yeah, of course.
Yes, okay. Absolutely. And you can actually see the cross there. It's a great piece of work. So where are you going with this? Where do you see yourself being pointed in life with your sculpture?
Well, the more and more that I work towards the types of sculpture that I develop, I see myself as a type of environmentalist.
Okay.
So the ideas that are posing problems to us, like that of burning fossil fuels and different types of dirty energy, that needs to be scrapped and thrown out the window, and we need to get in renewable energy.
Sam, thank you so much for coming into the studio with us this afternoon. Again, if you want to go and see some of Sam's work, samzeely.com is the web address, and you can have a look at a lot of his sculptures here.
Community Radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.